Anyone else from UEI College on the line? Is everybody here?
Vina should be on this.
Who should be?
Vina.
Yeah. Somebody's guilty of putting us on hold.
Is that prosecutable crime?
Might be.
Well, you can carry terminate the call. Call.
I'm going to. I'm going to recall.
You know what? That's a good idea. Everybody, please hang up, and then I'll redial back in. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Welcome to CenturyLink Conferencing. Please enter your passcode followed by the pound or hash. Please hold while I confirm your passcode. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the fourth person to join the meeting.
Hi, this is Terry. We'll wait till everybody's...
Yeah, much better.
Much better. Okay.
Should we start?
Yeah. And well, as a gentle reminder, please do not put your phone on hold because we will get your music. Otherwise, until you are, we come to your agenda item, if you would please mute the phone. Thank you.
This is Alex Collins.
Thank you,
Alex. University.
Do you want to go through roll call again?
It's up to you.
What's not?
Okay.
The Finance Committee of the Arizona State Board of Private Postsecondary Education is now in session. We apologize for getting started a few minutes late today. Is there any discussion of the prior minutes? I know you weren't in attendance or a member of the board.
Unfortunately, I don't know that we will ever
We will not be able to approve those minutes.
We can post them on the website as just draft.
Yeah.
Discussion only.
I do not have any additions or corrections to suggest. The board has been, or the finance committee has been on vacation for almost a year now, and we are excited to be back on the job. So, we're going to move Fortis College to the top of the agenda. There was a request that we change the order. And so, do we have any representatives from Fortis on the phone?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair. This is Glenn Tharp, the campus president of Fortis College Phoenix. Additionally, on the line is Jason Pullman, the business office manager of Fortis College Phoenix. And then representing the corporate office, EA Corporate, is our CFO, Steve Budosh, and our senior analyst, Jason Mika.
Okay. And is there anybody here in the room representing the college?
No, we're all out of state, unfortunately, today.
Well, I hope it's someplace fun, Glenn. Do you want to give us...
Well, David, it's a beautiful Dallas.
I was in Dallas for a week a couple weeks ago. So, do you want to give us an update? Or make
yeah,
a statement?
I would like to give you a brief update, if you'll indulge me. You know, it's things for the college have been, you know, about where they've been. We haven't significantly improved, nor have we, significantly digressed into place where we want to be. You know, so much of what we did the last few years is because we were on financial hold with the accreditors, which all has been cleared. So finally, we have the ability to add new programs, which, you know, we've identified and spoke at this meeting several times that's really going to be the key to give us over the top. Because currently we have four programs, practical nursing, dental hygiene, which are very strong programs. But as discussed previously, very expensive programs to operate. So the operating margins are very, very tiny on those, if in the best scenario. So And then we have MADA, Medical Assistant Dental Assistant, and they've been very slow. Dental assistants showed a little uptick, but MA is actually not. So what we've been working on feverishly for about the last 4 to 6 months is completing the Dental Hygiene Bachelor's Degree Completion Program, which Phoenix College will solely host, and we get a ton of interest for this, a ton. We get asked about it all the time. So we're very close to finishing the state app. In fact, if the state app is done, I'm just waiting on the check, and I'll deliver it to the state board next week. And then we'll go right into finishing up the ACCSE applications that are necessary for that. And the initial pro formas on that program, we will, it looks like we'll establish profitability fairly rapidly with, you know, with two starts of 15 a year. There is no lab component to this. This is, you know, strictly a degree completion program. So it's certainly, we're pedaling as fast as we can because we know that's going to get us into the black. At the same time, we're looking at the addition of any other programs that make sense. But due to our location and stuff, we have to very much vet that and such. So that's where we sit today. You know, a lot has changed. But it's going too soon.
Okay. I'll turn it over to my committee member. Thank you, Dr. Newman.
Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. On the documents that you supplied on the internal financial statements, you have the student starts and... you know, we're at 32 actual for September for the first quarter. And then, you know, the numbers thereafter increase significantly. Does that, do those numbers include any of the dental hygiene, or are they restricted to the nursing, the AS and dental hygiene, and then the two assistants?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, no, they don't curve, don't include any of the projected for that. This is just simply for the current programs, for what is active.
I guess the question then is, like, how, you know, what's the, what's your level of confidence to make these projections, given that, you know, that for the first quarter, you know, they're off by a fairly significant
50%
margin, right?
Yeah, I will say it's I have fair confidence in that. The key there will be the core programs, quite frankly, which are, I consider the MA and DA program. The reason you're looking at the September 16th, the 3 month, there wasn't a nursing and dental hygiene start in there, so that accounts for roughly roughly 48 students if you hit your budget. We came in a little light with that. The other programs, but you know, once we have those, the other projected time frames include those. So while September 16 looks bad, it's more of a condition of timing, I would say, on the starts, that they don't start like the other programs, which start every 6 weeks.
We are almost halfway through December now, and the projection was to have 118 starts for the quarter end of December. How close are you to that 118 number?
I don't have that data open exactly. We're shy of that, that's for sure, but not terribly shy of that.
So it's not
unfortunately,
not
a, I don't have.
You're not 50%.
Not 32. So, you know.
Right now we're at about 76.
Which, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Not including December start, which was our target, but we're at about 76 right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We'll have 5 to 8 of once the December starts all said and done. So that takes us into the 80s. January we have a big start because we have a nursing start, 31 nurses plus the core and the dental.
Will the dental hygiene completion, will that be a similar tuition as the dental hygiene associates? Because it seems
no,
like
no, the dental hygiene associates doctor is much higher because it's got all the clinical components of the labs and all this stuff. What we're shooting at for tuition all in for the 90 credits required to complete the dental hygiene bachelor's, and there's two tracks they can take, is about $18,000 all in.
Okay. And you said the corresponding expenses are lower.
Much lower. Much, much lower. Because, you know, you don't get the lab ratios where you have to pay, you know, 1 to 5 and have, you know, dentists and
right.
Dental hygiene. It's much better. Much, much better.
And then either for you or your team, Glenn, or for the EA folks on the call, you know, given the current ratio based on the financials that you supplied, are currently at about 0.4, which is, I think, where they've been for a while. From a cash flow standpoint, what is either the internal cash flow capacity, and then from an EA standpoint, you know, how much is the parent company able and willing to subsidize?
Yeah, because the cash flow is negative at the school. But I will turn that over to either Jason Meek or Steve Budoff.
This is Steve Budoff. The company has been committed and will stay committed to Sub Phoenix. We still believe that it's a strategic location for us. And I think Glenn elaborated on the programs that he wants to add. And we're working steadfastly to move those through because we really think. I think, as Glenn said, the costs are much less to deliver, and it will significantly help the school. You know, from a cash flow perspective, we will support the school, and you know, EA in total, we do, I believe, a very, very good job in collecting our receivables, and you know, we're able to maintain our cash flow. I will call out that. You know, we have a plan this year, which you have a copy of, and we were actually ahead of that plan for the first 3 months of the year, and we'll stay ahead of that plan through December, as of my projections currently. And as we see a restored profitability, one thing that has been, I think, as I have mentioned to the board before, over the last several years, the company has gone through a pretty significant operational and financial restructuring. Included in that operational restructuring was the wind down of about 10 schools across the country over the last 4.5 years. And we've done that responsibly without any issues with our students. We funded those losses. And that's significant. But we're done. We have our final teach out in our last campus closed in December. So that cash drain, which 2014 was close to $10 million, and last year was about a $4 million cash drain. That cash drain is literally gone. So the company is in the process of rebuilding its balance sheet, and its current ratio will be better at the end of December, and we're able to manage our finances accordingly.
Okay. While we're addressing the parent company's financial health, can you help us understand? You went from if I'm reading the financial statements correctly, which is always a question, went from a profit of approximately $31 million in 2015 to a loss of close to $20
million. Right. In 2015, the company renegotiated and did a significant financial restructuring with its lenders. At approximately $120 million revolver debt, and we eliminated that in exchange for $55 million worth of preferred stock. So there was a gain of basically a P&L gain of close to $60 million in 2015, which is the gain on the extinguishment of the debt. So the company is now debt-free, and the bank groups took a preferred stock interest in the company. Our primary shareholder still owns, still has control of the commons, still holds all the seats on the board. But that was the big gain in 2015, was the gain on the extinguishment of the debt. You know, and our debt service has been running roughly $20 million a year over the last 10 years. And you know, part of the restructuring was, you know, where the industry is, and we just went to our lenders and said, we can't afford it. And they worked with us. Our equity sponsor threw in another equity infusion for working capital purposes in 2015. So that's where the gain is. When you look at 16 numbers, and if you peel out a number of non-cash charges, our actual operating EBITDA was close to $3 million in cash from our current business. And what I look at is adding back my discontinued losses of about $4 million. My adjusted EBITDA was positive of about $7 million. So there are a lot of non-cash charges in that P&L from, stock amortization, depreciation amortization, and a lot of there was a lot of asset adjustments and write-offs in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. So, we're cash flow positive, and we're on the path to hitting our plan for 2016, and we have the full support of our banks. And more importantly, we have the full support of our board and majority shareholder, who's been with the company for 12 years and has never taken a dividend. So,
Okay. Well, thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Do you have any questions? Glad you're back, sort of. Glad we're back on the road to get in the finance committee.
Okay. Well, then we look forward to your next quarterly report, and you have a productive time in Dallas.
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board member. Have a good day.
All right.
Bye, Glenn.
Bye, Chair.
Okay, we'll now return to our published order of agenda, and that's a discussion and action on the financial status and license renewals. First in that part of the agenda is Arizona Heart Foundation.
Morning.
Good morning. Welcome. Do you have any representatives on the phone?
No.
Okay. Would you please introduce yourselves and your position with the school for the record?
My name is Paula Banahan, and I'm the executive director.
That's Sean Kerrigan, chief financial officer.
Welcome. We appreciate your being here. Is there anything you would like to share with us?
Just that the school is continuing to progress. We had graduation this month, and all 7 graduates are employed.
Okay.
So we're very happy about that.
I'm sure they are, too. That's great. Great news. Okay. Do you have any questions for me?
Yeah. Hold on a sec. I have to back and forth. So my first question is, did you guys sell the building?
We did not. The board elected not to sell. So we're almost going to be fully leased within 30 days, which will make a big difference.
Okay. And so does the school own the building, or
the foundation owns the building? The school will have, it's about 5,500 square feet. It won't pay rent. But we have 2 cath labs downstairs, and the last tenant to move in will be the Arizona Heart Institute.
Okay. So, I apologize. I was mentioning to Glenn that by the time I get through the entire stack, I have
you kind of forget
myself.
The foundation.
The first ones.
The,
so,
if
you could just explain.
Yeah.
Who owns a building? Because I thought I saw it as an asset, but also a liability on the current balance sheet.
Yes.
And so if that's not the case,
the foundation still owns the building, and we still owe $2.9 million.
Okay.
And your relationship, explain, if you would, for Dr. Mittman, the relationship between the foundation and the school.
Okay, the foundation was the research arm of the Arizona Heart Institute for 40 years. Dr. Dietrich retired 4 years ago, and I'm not sure if you're aware, but he has brain cancer. He's still alive, but he doesn't come to work every day. We're in a state of transition from not selling the building to actually leasing the building and making the building take care of itself. For the last 5 years, the school was the only means of income for the foundation because the research had ended. So with the building fully leased, the school doesn't have that pressure. So we can focus on other programs that we're going to be initiating instead of the research. So we're actually changing the mission to be one truly of just education. We have nursing programs that we're working with the Arizona College of Nursing. So we have more programs that we're developing as we speak, which we'll be submitting. But it's gone through a whole transition in 4 years.
Okay.
So.
And just to clarify, the foundation owns the school.
The foundation houses the school, yes.
Right. And is the school a separate legal entity?
No.
No.
So that's the reason it's showing, the building is showing up on the balance sheet.
Okay.
And with that said, we're also focusing on the school itself too. As you can see, we're still going to be, we got a new cohort coming in January. 10 students, you know, we need 13 to be break even, so we're still trying to get a few more in there so the school can sustain itself as the rest of the operation becomes break even, or, you know, bring in a little bit of money too.
Okay.
So we can sustain ourselves.
Right. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, I
did mean to interrupt.
That's fine. On the P&L, it lists consulting expense at $269,056. Could you explain that?
That's the mostly
big chunk of the expenses.
The two teachers are actually in the consulting area. They're not staff, as well as we've gone through several different accounting agencies, and now we have Sean on as a contract laborer versus an employee at this point.
So Sean would show up under
consulting.
Okay. And instructors?
They are under consultants.
The contract, yeah. I mean, it's really probably contract labor versus consulting line item, but
yeah, I would think that you would want to have the instructors as an educational expense as opposed to general instructor. But
right. you may want to. So those are all under 1099s,
mm-hmm.
I see, right? And they teach on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. You may just want to check with your accounting auditors about who could be 1099 and who can be a part-time employee if they
both do other things outside of our employment or outside of our school. They speak, they have other
sure.
That we're not their only full-time
job. I understand. I think usually if someone has a regular schedule and works in a regular location, my understanding, but again, it's your
right.
It's your school, so you
I know where we are.
Just
yeah.
Check with your auditors
yep.
on that. And then book sales at $131,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
What are the books?
Well,
I'm just interested because
we have the instructor is writing the fifth edition of the book, and it's really the book that all stenographers have at their machines. It's the Bible, they sort of say. So he's doing his fifth edition. So and the sales go up several months at different times for when school starts.
So it's national sales.
It's a national sales.
Solely sales here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those are.
And does the publisher own? Are you the publisher of the book?
No. We pay the publisher, and then we give the instructor 8%.
Okay. Okay, so you own the copies.
We own,
right.
Yes.
Right, and so you check, it's your revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then I guess you mentioned earlier that you're looking for 10 students in January. So is that the break even?
No, this 12 or 13 would be the break even. So we're still trying to get a couple more in there, but right now 10 is a solid number.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I'm going to go to the last page mm-hmm. here. And if my eyesight is correctly identified, you've got that page in front of mm-hmm. you. Line 16 on that form is captioned extraordinary and unusual income and expense. And we have, all things considered, a fairly large number there, $125,000 projected and actual for the quarter just ended, and $154,000, $155,000 for cumulative for the next quarter. It's about the end. Can you help me understand what that is?
Sure. When we stopped doing the research downstairs, there was a lot of equipment. So we sold everything that wasn't bolted to the floor.
Okay. So that's asset sales. All right. So, discussion. Yes, between us.
Mm-hmm.
We have, our task is to
determine whether to grant the renewal.
Right.
With SIPs.
Right.
Or
right.
Whatever they are.
I forgot that we'd move the
reports
back to the.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a recommendation here.
No, not actual recommendation. You can now. It's been codified in rule that the finance committee can take official action.
Right. So, here are my thoughts. I think they are continuing to make progress. I think we ought to go ahead and approve their license renewal with a stipulation that provide a bond.
I'm sorry.
They have one.
Right, that you maintain the bond. And continue with the quarterly reporting. What are your thoughts?
I second that.
Well, I didn't make the motion, so.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good with that.
Okay, so then I will formally make the motion that we approve the regular vocational program license renewal with the stipulation to maintain the bond of $53,900. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a typo in my thing. And continue with quarterly reporting. Will you agree to those stipulations?
Yes.
Okay. The move. Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. Thank you very much for
thank
your time
you.
Today
yes.
and for preparing a good report. Okay.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Next on the list is my dental assistant.
Good morning.
Good morning, doctor. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Good morning.
Would you please introduce yourself for the record?
I'm William Poulter, Director of Education in my dental system.
Okay, and you're also the owner of the school?
Correct.
Right. And do you have any representatives on the phone?
I do not.
Okay, that's quite all right. Is there anything you'd like to share with us before we go forward?
Not really, no.
Okay. Thank you for your report. Do you have any questions for me?
Sure.
Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning.
So how are you guys progressing on the management plan?
On the what side?
Management plan to improve.
Oh, we're doing well. We've done a couple things. We're starting classes every other month now instead of every month.
Okay.
So that'll reduce expense. It doesn't really dip income that much, only because students aren't still waiting that long. We have partnered with a large corporate dental office to provide dental assistant training for their potential employees and their current dental assistant staff. And yeah, those are the two main things that are going on. Dental revenues drastically increased, so that's obviously helping keep things going.
So, as of June 30th, you showed an operating loss of $68,000, and your initial investment in the company had decreased to about $18,000. And so, I guess my question, and I know that you've said in various at various points that you're able and willing to continue to invest in the company, that you have a 50% stake in another practice. And so I guess I just wonder, at what point do you see either this turning around, or are you going to have to make another investment in the company?
I mean, it has already so far this quarter. So we're cash flow positive now.
For the quarter of which one?
The one beginning October 1st.
We just broke even cumulatively, and we're positive, obviously, for the fourth quarter. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's self-sustaining current.
Okay. And are you getting a good return on your investment in terms of marketing? Looks like you have budgeted, I think, $60,000 a year.
Yeah, I mean, all of our marketing expenses, and that's why it's a little bit misleading as far as the educational expenses. All of our marketing dollars we categorize as educational expense, since that is the main business that's happening. Some of those are, in fact, for patient acquisition, which in turn will lead to student acquisition, ideally. The biggest number on there is our continued support of our website and internet marketing. So that will decrease. That payment will go away as of February of next year. So the monthly commitment there.
Okay. You said something in response to Dr. Mittman's question,
mm-hmm.
that caught my attention. You said that you've got a contract now with a major corporate dental.
I wouldn't call it a contract, but more of an agreement.
An agreement.
Only
okay.
Because we can't contract people.
Okay.
It is, you know, obviously.
And what do you project that the number of students that you will get from that relationship might be?
Their projections are a lot higher than my projections, only because what I've seen in the last year from my original projections. they anticipate sending us quite a few. What that ends up being, I anticipate maybe 3 to 5 a class.
Okay.
So I mean, they think it's gonna.
And what do they think it's gonna be?
They think it's gonna be in like 15 to 20.
And if they're right, do you have the capacity to?
Yeah, we can start 40 a month.
Okay.
So.
Well, that would be a nice problem to have, right?
It would be a tremendous problem to have.
Okay. So now, I've asked you to give us a little bit more color on the legal action that you briefly mentioned in response to a question in the questionnaire. What you said is, attach is a copy of the lawsuit filed. So on and so forth, like I mentioned, all the parties to the lawsuit. And then you say the current status of the lawsuit is that both parties have agreed to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a copy of the suit in my material, so could you just give me a little bit of color? What was the controversy was about?
Yeah, we are sued for allegedly stealing materials from another institution, and then it proved that they were false accusations, and now the lawsuit is supposed to be dropped on the 16th.
Reasonable. Okay. All right. Just wanted to know what the nature of the controversy was. So. It's nice that that has gotten behind you. Okay, I'm going to draw your attention to a couple of aspects of your financial reporting that I think I know the answer, but I would like to get some clarity from you. Based on the information you provided us, This is to the right page of our report. Looks like this. I don't know if you can see that.
Okay.
Okay. And you have two different forms that look like that. One dated June 30, and the other one dated September 30. And on that, you report a very condensed version of your balance sheet and your income statement. Through June 30, you list current assets of almost $32,000 and current liabilities of just a little bit over $76,000, right? Okay. Then at the bottom of the balance sheet section, we ask you to calculate the current ratio. And it's listed as 1-to-1. The actual current ratio, if I did the math right, is 0.42.
Okay.
And then on the next day, the next page, it has gone from 0.42 to 0.05. I think, other than not understanding how to calculate the current ratio properly, which would explain the math error, if we go to your financial statements, which were you were prepared with the assistance of, well, that's the management report, excuse me. There we go. With the assistance of Ball and McGraw, these numbers.
That's as of June 30th?
As of June 30th. Uh-huh. These numbers tie to what you put in our form. Then you also provided your own internal financial statements for the subsequent quarter. And I appreciate that. And this is where my question is. It appears that a bunch of what were reported as long-term liabilities on these financial statements mm-hmm. are now current liabilities on this financial statement.
Okay.
Okay, and we went from we went from current liabilities of $76,000 to
$425,000.
Okay?
Yeah.
So let me just, I'm not going to play 20 questions with you. You're not an accountant, nor do you play one on TV, I'm assuming.
I don't.
All right. The definition of a current liability is a liability that's due within 1 year.
And they're not.
Okay. So it's just a misclassification, and that most of these liabilities are really long-term, which if I'm looking very quickly, it looks to me that your current liabilities are closer to $10,000. Would that be fair?
Yep.
Those are what to do within the year. In which case your current ratio is actually positive. Mm-hmm. It's above one, which is where we want it to be. That's comforting to us on the financial committee. And what I would suggest that you do, I know you're working with Ball and McGraw, it'll make things more streamlined for them if you'll get your internal bookkeeping accounting software set up so that the long-term liabilities are properly treated as long-term liabilities.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for that? Okay. With that, any additional input from you before we have a conversation about what we should be doing here?
No.
Okay. Before us is the task of deciding whether we should renew or approve.
This is a recommendation. This one is recommendation because
right.
It's going before the board as the commission on the right.
Okay. So we need to decide whether we want to recommend to the full board that we approve the transition from conditional to a regular vocational program license. And if we make that recommendation, we're going to propose that you maintain your $100,000 surety bond. Okay. Now, before I complete that, you said that students have gone up.
Students have?
Enrollment has gone up.
Paying stayed the same.
Well, So it's the improvement in your financials has been primarily from the clinic?
Correct.
Okay. All right. The reason I was asking is because it just occurred to me that the $100,000 surety bond may not be sufficient if enrollment has gone up significantly. But okay. So thoughts?
I think that compared to the last time that we were here, you know, the financial position is somewhat improved. So I would be comfortable making a motion for, to recommend to the board for approval, going from conditional approval pending the bond and the quarterly reporting. Do you have one last question? Initially, you had...
Before you ask the question, I'm going to go ahead and second that motion.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I recall correctly, a number of students were either family members or were discounted or scholarshiped. What's the... Has that continued, or that was just at the...
That was just the very first class.
And so the new students that you're enrolling now are full-paying students.
Correct.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. I guess we'll see you at the January board meeting.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time, Mary. Thanks, Terry.
Next on our list, or the agenda, which is also in the form of a list, is Steiner Education Group, which includes the Arizona School of Massage Therapy, Phoenix and Tempe campuses, and the Cortiva Institute, Tucson and Scottsdale campuses. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any representatives with you on the phone?
I do not believe so.
Okay. Would you please introduce yourselves and your positions with the school for the record?
Sure. My name is Elizabeth Hepler, or Beth. I am the Director of Accreditation and State Licensure for Steiner Education Group. I'm happy to be here today because I'm from the East Coast, and it's much warmer here.
Okay. My name is Jeff Rosen, and I'm the Corporate Controller for Steiner Education Group.
Okay. I'm assuming you're also from the East Coast.
Yeah, but I'm still happy to be here, but I'm from Florida, so it's...
Okay. So, All right.
So, but I am happy to be here.
Well, and we're happy to have you. Hope you can spend your entire holiday season with us. Do you have anything you'd like to share with us before we begin the grilling? Excuse me, the question.
The question. Overall, Steiner Education Group is doing well. It's been tough, I think, for all schools. We've got a plan in place, though, to continue to see improvement over 2017. One update is we did receive our renewal of accreditation letter from the Cortiva Tucson campus. I was getting ready to board a plane yesterday when it came in, so I haven't seen the letter. I will forward it to Terry so she has it. But we were granted renewal of accreditation for 5 years with stipulations and reporting based on student outcomes.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. We are still pending our asset letter for the Arizona School of Massage in Phoenix and Tempe. We just had our renewal visit, and we're still in that process. Looking for that letter every day, though.
Okay. Anything else?
Let's see. I wrote, and I'm going to try and find it in here, but you might find it quicker. There was a significant drop in assets from 2015 of a total of about almost $42 million. $16.5 million in 2016.
Yeah, that has to do with the purchase accounting. We sold the company at the end of 2015.
Okay.
So there's obviously adjustments. Readjust for goodwill and a lot of intercompany stuff and whatnot. So the net should be close, though. I mean, if you look at the assets minus the liabilities, I believe.
They provided a copy of the financial statements.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out which financial statements I was looking at. I have to excuse me, this is my first meeting, and I haven't figured out how to tabulates
it's interesting because we have two separate sort of companies, if you will,
this
here.
One was
we have financial statements from Scottsdale, from Phoenix, and from Florida.
Yeah.
Correct.
And the parent company.
And then you have a balance sheet from the parent company, probably.
Right. And the balance sheet would be...
So here... I've got my auditor's statements here.
Maybe this stack.
Okay. I've got a consolidated balance sheet here for all of Steiner.
Okay.
If you have a copy machine, page 4 in the audited financial statements.
And the year ended which?
I'm sorry.
Which
2015. It's got December 31st, 2014 and 15.
Okay.
Because there's December 9th, right, which is the predecessor, and then there's the other one, and there's another one December 31st.
Right. Yeah. Right. And we have that one.
I was looking at your...
Okay, I see assets dropped from 84,000 to 30,000. But you'll notice it's goodwill, a lot of it. Goodwill went from 30,009 to 2765. Okay. That's just the purchase account.
Okay.
It's completely non-cash.
And then in terms of assets... And so how about the decrease in... in cash or in current assets, which decreased about $10 million. Is that an operating loss?
Some of it is operating losses. Some of it is, it kind of depends on the time of the year. But again, a lot of it is definitely operating losses.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some of it is our parent company. We take money from our parent company, take the money, put the money back. Takes money, so it's a time.
Okay. You clearly have the biggest set of documents here.
We hit you a lot of documents soon.
And okay, so I'm looking. So it's also the Arizona School of Massage Therapy.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. And so project a fairly, so I guess maybe if you could just elaborate a little bit on the plan for increasing revenue and profitability, and I guess particularly in the, because I think the Tucson school lagged behind significantly, and there's a fairly substantial jump for projection and tuition revenue from 2016 to 2017. And I wonder how...
Well, it's a relatively small campus, and we've had some turnover in the admissions department, but we think we've stabilized that now. So we hope that should turn around.
And as mentioned in our plan, we do have a new VP of admissions who has brought to us a lot of experience and some new ideas on how to market to our students, and especially our younger students.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, I calculated that you were looking at about $3 million of tuition revenue compared to about $2.8 million, so almost a 25% increase.
And again, they go back to the same thing, which was we've had a lot of turnover in our...
Right. Then I guess my question is, how do you expect to get from where you are this year to a 25% increase?
So a couple
in
things.
Tuition revenue, you know, next year.
Sure. We have restructured one of our programs. We had an underperforming aesthetics program that we've completely revamped, which... And sort of as I've talked to Terry about, it's kind of interesting because we have a separate regulatory authority for our aesthetics program. We're also regulated by the Board of Cosmetology here in the state of Arizona. So we have rearranged that program. We've revamped it. And we believe that it's going to help increase student enrollments and kind of continue to grow that population. We've changed some of our marketing strategies. We have changed for our Corteva Scottsdale location. We gave up some unused storage space, so our lease will cost us less next year and for the next 10 years. It's a new 10-year lease. We've had a wage freeze in effect. We've done a lot of things. One of the biggest challenges that we've had, which we're hoping will change, but we don't know. We don't have a crystal ball, is right now we are currently, and I'm not an expert in financial aid, but we are considered to be a clock hour school because we teach licensed professions, whereas in years past, we've always been able to calculate financial aid based on credit hours. So that was a huge change for us. That's a few years ago, I believe, 2011. So we're still sort of readjusting to how we're going to operate in a different sort of regulatory environment.
Yeah, and if I understood correctly the materials you presented, the Department of Education made the change in 2011.
Correct.
They decided to reverse course.
We believe, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when will you be able to switch back to a credit hour based?
We are still waiting. We're still working on the with the department on that. We anticipate it'll be early 2017. But with some of the change in administration, we haven't gotten a lot of sort of, it's been kind of a year-long project because we've been calculating kind of the outside coursework. When the department changed the regulations in 2011, mm-hmm. we became clock hour schools with our accrediting agencies. We sort of gave up our academic credit hours, if you will, so we've had to go back through that process and get our schools reapproved as credit hour schools. And then we've incorporated the outside coursework, which is a process that, as I understand it, a lot of schools went through several years ago and it was new to us. And the department has been slow in responding to what they're going to kind of do with us.
Okay. And let's assume that all goes out. We're not sure exactly.
We don't
when,
know, right.
But let's just say that it does. What does that do to your?
That would be fantastic for us, obviously, if we were able to fund our students based on credit hours. There would be a lower gap in aid. As I understand it, though, we have budgeted 2017, though, for the worst case scenario in case we have to maintain being a clock hour school.
Okay, and just what? So in terms of magnitude, what's the difference between? Is it a 10% difference? Is it a 25% difference? What are we talking about?
Right now, approximately 25% of our students have a gap of about $3,500 from our $11,000 tuition because of the gap. That gap goes away. It could be several $1 million for us as a whole. Not
here locally, but
right.
As a whole, yeah, several $1 million.
Okay. All right. Anything else you'd like to share with us? Any more questions? Okay, but they might come up. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that they have a parent company that has the wherewithal to the parent company has lost a considerable amount of money over the last 5 years. But it seems like the parent company has the reserves to continue their current ratio. It's pretty substantial, almost 3. So I think keeping
we may have a mild disagreement. The Arizona campuses are profitable.
Yes.
Right? Tucson campus isn't profitable. We hope to be able to still profitable. And they hope that that is going to be more profitable this year. The parent company is struggling financially, and while that's a concern, our Arizona students are protected by their surety bond. They don't have
one. We have one at our Scottsdale location.
Yeah,
our smallest location.
Isn't that the Tucson Corteva? Because that was the old Desert
Institute, I believe.
And it was only 15. It was the original.
We have a small one. And I actually don't have that information in front of me. I believe it's actually our
sure.
Scottsdale is our smallest location, and we do have a small bond with the state.
I'm pretty sure it's the
Tucson.
Corteva Tucson.
It's Tucson, okay.
Yeah. With 15, and that's just because it was
the way they originally set up.
It was set up a long time ago under the previous owner.
Okay. Well, that's going to change my thought.
We do have a small bond also in place for our aesthetics program. We actually have a certificate of deposit. It's small, but again, that's sort of a strange situation because that's with the Board of Cosmetology.
They're
right.
not right. under those yep. students would not, unfortunately, because even if something would happen, we have learned that those students aren't going to be protected or helped in case of a closure. Those students are really out in the cold.
Yeah.
But there isn't anything we can do about that. So ours are just the Arizona.
Right, right. And so here's the concern that we have as a board. Unfortunately, we've had several schools that had ailing parent companies closed because of the financial problems of the parent company.
Right. Now, keep in mind, our parent company is a diverse, it's, you know, obviously we know that we, you know, what's happened to a number of schools. Our parent company is primarily a spa company. Our parent company operates spas aboard cruise ships. We have worldwide holdings in the spa market. It's a diversified company. It's not...
The one you're looking at is for Steiner Education Group.
Right.
But Steiner Education Group is owned by Steiner Leisure Limited.
Which is a profitable company.
$900 million company, yes.
$900 million
revenue? Yes.
What's income?
I'm gonna estimate, I don't have it in front of me, but about 11 or 12 million.
We don't have those financials.
We don't have those financials.
We can provide those if that would be helpful. So Steiner Education Group is, again, there's multiple levels of ownership, but the ultimate parent company.
Right. So the issue for us is how to protect our students.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And the policy the board has adopted is to ask for a surety bond.
Right.
Now, in your case, based on tuition.
I do accounts.
Right. That surety bond is a lot more than the $15,000 you got.
Right.
It would be approximately $540,000.
Right.
Is that something you would be willing to post for us? We may end up asking for you to do it anyway.
Right.
But my thought that I want to discuss with my compatriot here is, if you've posted that bond, do we really need to have you a quarterly reporting?
Right.
We will get an updated financial a year from now, and if things at the immediate parent company have worsened significantly, we can revisit the question of whether or not corporate reporting is something that we have to do. But since all of the issues are related to the parent company, which we don't supervise, and the schools themselves are profitable, I don't know how much benefit to either the institution or to the board is going to be gained for by your continuing to come before us once a quarter, although we would love to have you.
We'd like being here.
Yeah, and I think you would love to be here more in the spring than you would in the middle of the summer.
Right.
Although it's much better here in the summer than it is in Florida.
Much better, because, yes.
Yeah, okay. So would you be willing to post
We have bonds in a number of our states. I mean, it's just a matter of business.
And so our alternatives are basically what you're saying is either we come out to Arizona once a quarter, or we put up a surety bond.
No.
It sounds like we want the bond anyway.
I think we're gonna ask for the bond anyway. So I'm not giving you the out. I'm just saying if the bond were there, which you have to agree to provide, then I would tell him I don't think we need to have quarterly reporting. But at the end of the day, we're still going to ask you to have a bond, and if you don't do that, then it's going to go before the entire board.
Of course.
Well,
yeah. Your 540 is for 540, 572. Well, actually 539, 572. That's for the Arizona School of Massage. Then Cortiva is 291.1.
So the sum of those two. No, we didn't need to do that.
It took me a while to figure that out. Without
We have a statutory or regulatory, I guess, number, and that's what we're going to end up asking for. And so it's a lot more fun if you agree to that stipulation as opposed to just trying to twist your arm. So I'm going to assume that you will agree to the stipulation. How do you feel, given that the bond is going to be there? Are our interests adequately protected, or do we need to continue to get them to produce a bunch of paper?
No, I agree. I think your assessment is spot on.
Okay,
yeah,
so
846.72.
Okay. So the motion that I will make is that we approve the 2017 regular vocational program for the schools collectively, with the stipulation that they provide the surety bonds as calculated by the director, and that you not submit quarterly reporting. Will you agree to those stipulations?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your being here. And if you're going to be in town a few days, which you probably not, be glad to give you some ideas where you might want to go visit.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next on our list, I just packaged up the agenda. Tucson College.
They're all on the phone.
On the phone. So can we have the representatives of Tucson College on the phone introduce themselves?
Dennis Chavez, campus director.
Katrina Van Natta, corporate controller.
And is that everybody?
I know. There it is.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is Charlie Brisman. I'm General Counsel, Chief Compliance Officer of the parent company, Delta Career Education Corporation.
Hey, thank you all for being here. Would you like to give us an update before we start asking you questions?
I guess, Dennis, unless you want to start at the campus level, I'm happy to start at the corporate level if that's necessary. That's fine with you in the committee. Okay. So, members of the committee, we have been filing quarterly financial information with you for some time, and in July of this year announced that we were ceasing enrollments at the college and would begin an orderly wind-up. That wind-up is proceeding on schedule. Mr. Chavez and his colleagues have done a great job of making sure students are staying focused, and we currently believe that all of the students currently under roof will be completing their programs by the end of June 2017, which is the end of our fiscal year 2017. We did have a significant development at the corporate level just before Thanksgiving. I don't know if our letter to Ms. Stanfield is in your materials, but the very quick story is that in much the same way the representatives from Fortis were describing a debt for equity restructuring transaction, we too on Tuesday, November 22nd, consummated a restructuring under which just under $95 million of indebted was converted by its existing holders into preferred equity of the company that puts the company, as you can imagine, under any regulatory authority's financial responsibilities standards in a different and much more improved posture. Unfortunately, the plan remains to wind up Tucson College. The restructuring ensures stability, of course, at the parent company so that that wind-up can continue, and certainly for purposes of our shared services facility in Tempe, which has licensing from the board, the restructuring transaction, we think, solidifies or at least gives the board a basis for increased confidence in the financial stability of the entire Delta Group. I could run through some numbers in terms of annual savings and things like that, but against that backdrop, why don't I pause and ask first if there anything that my colleagues, particularly Mr. Chavez, wants to add.
Now that everything's going smooth on campus as far as teach out, we're projected to have the last students out, as Mr. Brisson stated, by the end of May. Everything's going well on campus.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I was pleased to read the letter that you've sent to Ms. Stanfield. Your concluding few paragraphs weren't as happy as I hoped they'd be, but I understand the need to continue to move forward with the closure of the school in Tucson. That being said, Ms. Dr. Nittman, do you have any questions for the school?
Sure. Thank you. How many students are currently enrolled in going through the teach-out process?
Currently, there's 61.
That's down from the 140 at the end of the last fiscal year or academic year, and so those people are being taught out at the graduation rate that roughly 80%.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And are they kind of clustered in one of the programs, or are they pretty distributed across all of these?
It's pretty distributed as always when we were enrolled.
Okay.
And then, we have to spread out the allied health programs and the trade program.
Okay. And do you have an updated, is the default rate, is that the most current year for fiscal year 2013? Thank you.
Yes.
So 23.5.
While I call up the document, if you're asking about what the department last published in late September, which was the final 2013.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I have in front of me. That's fine.
Okay. Bear with me for a second, because, of course, as my computer is most needed, it is freezing in. I apologize.
That's all right. Sure. I have it in front of me. It does say the 2013 at 23.5%. So I guess the question I have, and this is just sort of for my own edification is, you know, once you do the teach out and Tucson College ceases to exist, correct? But the parent company, Delta, continues, then do you have a responsibility or any relationship with the students who complete the program at Tucson as you otherwise would in terms of tracking either employment or loan repayment?
As a general matter, when the institution closes, at least, well, let me take one step back. So Tucson College is accredited by ACICS, and we will, on the current schedule, and with Tucson College and all of our other ACICS accredited institutions having just filed in November their campus accountability reports for 2016, which include graduation and placement data, we will still be required to compile and file a campus accountability report for Tucson College under ACICS's current framework for 2017. So though we expect the last student to leave the campus by the end of May or no later than June, with the filing of the 2017 CAR, I think as a practical matter and as a matter of accreditation, our information gathering and reporting obligations for the college will end. Under the board's rules, of course, and under certain aspects of the Department of Education's requirements, of course, we'll have certain ongoing availability and access obligations, such as availability for academic records and those sorts of things. But in terms of the student achievement metrics like placement, as a practical matter, unless ACICS changes its rules, and that, of course, is a very real prospect as it continues to fight for its life, but we believe the 2017 CAR will effectively end the college's compiling and reporting that sort of information.
Okay. If I could also just elaborate, we have been in communication, Kevin has been in communication with Mr. Chavez in Tucson, and we've become very diligent in requesting from NAF up front when institutions are at risk of getting our student educational records electronically, monthly, so that we'll have them in case of a closure. And Kevin spoke to Mr. Chavez yesterday, I believe it was, and they will be delivering the records to us electronically, as well as I assume EC will do what they need to do. Okay. So we'll have our students here.
Okay. Yes, I mean, I think we'll have belt and suspenders electronically for all our students. Within our student information system and also under our existing agreements with a third-party service provider, Parchment, students, regardless of campus from which they located, can make requests to us for their official and unofficial transcripts.
Any other questions?
And if I may just return to cohort default rates, and I apologize for my having been fumbling around, but the college's most recently published final three-year rate was the 2013 rate published at the end of September of this year. It was 23.5%. Just by coincidence, that was also its final fiscal year 12 three-year rate. So for the last two final rates at the college have both been 23.5%.
Okay. So discussion for us, their student population obviously is increasing. They have a bond currently at $453,000. If they maintain that bond, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't remain on quarterly reporting. Not a whole lot we can do between now and May. So let me make a motion that we approve the 2017 license renewal with the stipulation that the school maintain their surety bond. We agree to that stipulation?
Yes, we will.
Okay. So we have a motion.
Second.
quarterly is no longer required.
Quarterly reporting no longer required. We have a motion and a second. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you so much. And we appreciate your diligence in teaching out those students in Tucson.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you, all members of the committee. Ms. Stanfield, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Charlie.
Bye-bye.
We're now to the next section of our agenda, the review of quarterly reports. This is for the information to be provided to the Finance Committee, but we're not expecting to have to take any action. The first on the list is the Arizona Vocational Institute, the Training Institute, excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Minton, I got an email from Marco late last night that they were, he would not be able to be here, but obviously you made it. His son's having surgery.
Oh, well, I hope all goes well with that. Thank you for being here. Would you please introduce yourself for the record?
My name is Matthew Breacher. I'm the finance manager for Arizona Vocational Training Institute.
Thank you for being here today. Is there anything you would like to share with us?
There's really been no material changes. It's just continuing as it had in the past, barely break even on the student enrollment. The school is finally wrapping up a lot of the online curriculum that it's developed so that they can move to a hybrid delivery method where students can do the studying and the lectures online and then come to the school and do the hands-on separate. So we're hoping that'll boost enrollment.
Okay. Do you have any questions for the school?
Just
we don't have to call the school. Mr. Breacher.
I think my memory serves me correctly. You went from a loss, an operating loss of about $60,000 to a small profit this year of about $2,700.
Well, I think the accumulated deficit was $60,000. That was over a number of years. I don't have the prior year in front of me.
No, I was just going to ask you, it seems like an improvement, so I was just going to ask you what you did.
It's just been cutting some of the expenses, trying to keep student enrollment going.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was okay.
Your income is up.
It seems like a substantial improvement. So you're going to be congratulated if you went from a current deficit of over $60,000 to profitability.
The board chair is correcting for my first time naivete. I'm just trying to say that it looks like you did a really good job year over year.
Well, it's a non-cash improvement because I think a lot of it was related to depreciation. You know, on a cash basis, cash flows are still kind of pretty tight and breaking.
Okay. And then, did you...
You're done. Well, I don't have any questions, but I do appreciate your coming down here. I just also want to say that I was pleased that you are improving. I hope that we'll continue to see improvement and that with this new delivery model that enrollment can increase because I'm sure that you, along with us, would like you to have to be part of this quarterly reporting.
Correct.
Although we would love to have management. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Next on our list is Brighton College. Do we have representatives from Brighton?
We do.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. Do you have any representatives with you on the phone?
We do not.
All right.
We were hoping. Plans changed, but that's okay. We're here.
All right. Would you please introduce yourselves for the record?
Sure. I'm Paul Zanoni, president of Brighton College.
Sam Fernandez, executive vice president.
Okay. What would you like to share with us?
Well, that we're looking forward to answering your questions and sharing data on the progress that we've made from Q2 to Q3. We're very optimistic in the direction we're headed, particularly with some of the key performance indicators that are trending in the right direction, and some key initiatives that have been launched that seem to be dictating the direction that we're headed as an organization with regards to the market, specifically regarding some partnerships that have recently been established and that are very, very promising. So we're looking forward to sharing that information with you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have some questions for these handsome and talented men?
Please share.
I can. Twist my arm. Q2 to Q3, we went from 53 new student enrollments to 86. We're projecting in Q4, 105. So we feel very positive that that's going in the right direction. Course releases, which is a huge indicator of our retention, the way our model is structured. Students that are progressing get one course released at a time, which is how we recognize revenue, by the way. That's gone up significantly. We averaged 100 course releases in Q2 per month. We bumped that up to 120 in Q3 per month. And Q4 is looking like we're going to be averaging about 135. The goal is to get it over 150. At 175 would be ideal. We're headed there. I mentioned partnerships. We've actually been piloting the last 3 months in agreement, a partnership with a workforce development organization called Deseret Industries, which has done very, very well. We had a meeting with them last week, in fact, at the the headquarters in Salt Lake City.
Okay.
And it was announced that they will be partnering with us going forward in every training location throughout the country, which is over 80 training locations, as well as every stake, if you're familiar with the LDS. As one of their primary training providers. So that was very encouraging. So we're looking forward to launching that relationship and moving forward with that. In addition, we are one of the exclusive training providers for United Healthcare in a new initiative that they've just launched, which actually started in Arizona called My Connections. It's essentially a community center in the West Valley, in Maryvale. They're opening up community centers all over the country as we speak. I think they're at 7 now in other states total. They're community centers?
Like a health center or a community
center? It's actually a community center that provides wraparound services, so food, health services, mental and
dental,
medical. Quite a few, all in one center. To try to basically, their objective is to try to help those that are receiving, subsidies, including Medicaid, to try to get them to a point where they're self-sufficient, gainfully employed, and able to sustain and support their families. So we're part of that service offering to provide them training, specifically in job-related, job-ready type career-type programs, entry-level career programs.
So are these among the programs that you already offer?
Yes, that have been approved.
So which ones are you going to do for Deseret and which ones for United?
All programs. Primarily, let me rephrase that. It's the short-term career-ready programs, which is what we're discovering is our niche in the market. Short-term programs that are under 12 months, that are under $4,000, that lead to some type of a professional certificate. In many cases, that are nationally recognized. For example, pharmacy technician. That's just one example.
Got it.
Focus on employability.
Focus. Correct. On employability. Correct. In addition to that, we just entered into an agreement with CVS, CVS Health, and they will be partnering with us to provide those job opportunities to students who complete our programs, in addition to their employees who want to advance their careers within CVS. That's another exciting partnership. That's literally hot off the press. And then another partnership that's actually starting to gain momentum is our high school initiative, CTE, Continuing Technical Education. So we've partnered with high schools, primarily in California, to provide career readiness programs to students in high school, primarily juniors and seniors. And CTE is a huge initiative around the country, and we're a part of that. So a lot of optimism going into 2017 in terms of the direction we're headed.
So we can say we were here.
I hope so. That's what we're looking forward to. So it's pretty exciting.
What's the United Healthcare one called?
I'm sorry?
The United Healthcare.
The name of the program is My Connection.
My Connection. Mm-hmm. So given the fact that you operate at a loss currently, mm-hmm. How does the increase... You have more students, but you also have more sites, and they're sort of geographically distributed. Do you have the infrastructure to actually be profitable with more students, or do you run the risk of incurring more losses?
Our system is designed for scale, so we can scale our LMS.
Yeah, we're online.
We're 100% online. So, you know, it really is designed, you know, to grow incrementally as we have the students, you know, to justify the growth. And by the same token, we can all scale back as well just as quickly, but obviously that's not the plan moving forward. So we can't support the growth, absolutely.
And I noticed in your in-house financial statements, pretty high advertising costs. About $175,000 on less than $500,000 of tuition.
That's changed significantly the last 6 months.
How so, and how, like, is it from a return on investment? It doesn't seem so good, but maybe is that what brought you to these new partnerships?
Yeah, the B2B initiative, absolutely. That's our focus moving forward is to, you know, go out and actually form agreements with organizations that are able to fund their clients. So really, we're partnering with funded students. Every one of these organizations provides some type of funding for the students. We're a non-Title IV school, so we don't receive any Title IV funding.
Okay. And so how does that factor into wiping out what has been about $500,000? How long will it take under this new model to become profitable?
We expect to be profitable in the first quarter of next year. We're close to cash flowing, and we expect to be profitable in the first quarter.
Okay. This is exciting news. Just so you can put a little bit more meat on the bone. Mm. How many students are you expecting from your relationship with Visionary Industries and the LDS Church through their employment specialists in the various state centers?
Yes. During the pilot period for the last few months, we've been averaging about 12 to 15 students. And the data, we have to, you know, provide that data, progress, progression, course completions, et cetera. So that went exceptionally well. And so at that point, the decision was made to roll us out across the nation starting in January, essentially. Hard to determine with 80 training centers and over 400 states. I mean, if we get, 0.25 students from every location per month, we're gonna do well. We're excited. Realistically, we anticipate approximately 30 students a month is what we're projecting, but that could go up higher. We feel it will, okay. But we don't know yet.
And where were the students located that participated in the pilot?
It's all throughout the country.
All right, and I'm assuming, have you had a pilot with United Healthcare yet, or?
We're getting ready to launch.
Getting ready to launch. So you don't have any data in which to make it a projection?
Correct. We haven't referred students, and with United Healthcare, that is WIOA funding. You're familiar with WIOA? Yeah. I'm presuming.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to take a look at your projections and compare them with your actuals, and I have that page in front of me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, turn past. So you had projected for the quarter end of September 30, 135 students. You had a starts, excuse me, and ended up with 102. You're projecting 135 for the period ended December 31st. We're almost to that date. How close do you think you're going to come to that number?
I think we're going to come, we may be shy of that. The third quarter. Fourth quarter. We will probably be about 25 to 30 students short. 25.
Okay, so about where we were in September.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm also noticing that your student break-even point is dropping. That is, you had projected to be 440 students, and actual, if you had 425, obviously it depends on which program they're in.
Right, so it does.
Right. But, so that's going in the right direction, but of course, actual students were lesser than you had projected,
right.
So we still have that gap. To what do you attribute your ability to reduce that break-even point?
You know, we're promoting the programs that generate a little bit more revenue. That seems to be
changing the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those are my questions. Do you have anything else?
Can I just ask? For the new programs or the new students, are you developing new programs or it's already existing programs? You don't have to invest any new.
No.
Okay.
No. Only existing.
And you do still have the seven that we identified the last renewal are still in teach-out. Is that correct?
Yes. The seven programs that we sunsetted. Correct.
Okay. Well, thank you both. We really appreciate your time today.
And thank you.
We wish you success in the future.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Same to you.
Thank you.
Next on our list, Cummings Graduate Institute for Behavioral Health Studies.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you.
Would you like to introduce yourselves for the record, please?
Yes, I'm Dr. Kara English. I'm the CEO of Cummings Graduate Institute and the director of its Doctor of Behavioral Health program.
My name is Brett Sabatini, and I'm the director of finance.
Okay, and do we have anybody with us on the phone?
No, we do not.
Okay, would you like to provide us with any kind of opening statement before we ask a few friendly questions?
Certainly. We are really excited about where we're going into 2017. We've invested in a new and improved operational structure that will really help us get where we need to be. We have almost doubled our enrollment from summer to fall, and we're looking at, again, increasing our enrollment, almost doubling our enrollment again in spring of 2017. And we're looking at working with a new marketing company to help us get a greater return on our investment for our marketing dollars through some grassroots efforts to increase organic traffic and help us get students in the door, especially here locally. So we're excited about that, and we're open and excited about answering your questions.
Okay. Did you ask questions first?
Sure. What is the total enrollment as of today?
We have 10 total students enrolled. So we initially enrolled 10 students, and then 5 of them graduated, and then we enrolled 5 additional students over the course of 2015 and 2016.
So when was the original? Because I saw that
we opened in June.
14.
We opened in June of 2015. So our initial enrollment, our initial semester was June.
And so 2015,
correct.
And the first, you said 4 students graduated.
That's correct.
Right. And
that's
when did
correct.
They graduate?
They did. They this time last year.
So in 2015. And so, how many either credits or how do you measure the program? So for a doctoral program, how?
60 credits. So per DEAC, which is, you know, we're moving forward with all full force to an application as soon as we're eligible. They require 60 credit hours minimum for a doctoral program. All of our students who come in have master's degrees in behavioral health or allied health fields, and so to bump them up to the doctoral level, they enter our program and must complete 60 credit hours. Many of our initial students transferred over from another degree program and so brought with them many, many credits, but as we move forward to be in line with DEAC accreditation requirements, they only allow a maximum of 9 degrees in transfer, so moving into 2017, we will no longer take any more than 9 credit hours in transfer for our doctoral program. So that's where you see the initial students coming in with a, you know, sometimes 30 credit hours and able to complete the program in that first year of enrollment. And then moving forward, we will not have students being able to complete the program in under 2.5 years unless they take more credit hours per semester than the normal full-time working professional is able to.
Sure. And they did dissertations.
Correct. They have a culminating project. So our program is very, very applied. We work directly with industry and partner with students already employed in organizations to aim their culminating project directly at an organizational need. And so in healthcare, there are many, many efforts at, you know, moving towards integration. Our doctoral program is the only one nationally that is completely focused on the provision of behavioral health in medical settings. So a lot of organizations, large and small, are looking at how do we do that right now. And so our graduates are able, through their culminating project, to meet that organizational need. And so with their culminating projects, it could be a couple of different siloed areas. Mainly what our students are doing is partnering with their organization to identify the need, and then aim with their culminating project to collect the patient data that they need to be able to demonstrate improvement in health outcomes based on their interventions. Some of them also are choosing to do an entrepreneurial venture, and so what they can do is use their culminating project to launch a new business in healthcare improvement.
So give me an example.
Well, I can give you a lot of examples.
This is like an example of a student, either a dissertation or a project, and the healthcare setting and how this fits. The whole model is very intriguing. And then also the, you talked about the Biodyne.
Correct.
Model as being also unique to the institute.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll give you an example of one of the students' culminating projects that excites me the most is a student who's currently enrolled in New Mexico. He has been working in the juvenile justice system for many, many years there, and he is a person with some degree of computer science background. He's actually an engineer in computer and technical systems, and decided as a mid-career life change he wanted to go into behavioral health and make a difference in the world. So he got his master's degree and then started working in the juvenile justice system, and noticed that in working with a psychiatrist there were a high degree of number of adjudicated juveniles coming in with a significant trauma history. And coming into the system, there's not a lot of care. Mental health is a hugely lacking service in our health system in America. We all know that. We see it in the news every day. And so he identified with working with a psychiatrist that all of these adolescents coming in had hugely significant traumatic experiences, but they were being medicated to sleep rather than treated. And so he, through his technical background, created a radio frequency for the juvenile justice system that allowed him to broadcast a guided meditation at night, to which all of his kids that he works with were asking for, because nobody likes to be on sleep medications. So he wanted to work with a psychiatrist to reduce the number of sleep medications, but also reduce the symptoms that led to sleep medications. And he was able to do that through his practicum internship. So his culminating project is actually aimed at the juvenile justice system to allow him to demonstrate the effects of the positive impact of his intervention in collaboration with juvenile justice, so that other juvenile justice programs across the nation can use a similar system. So that's just one example. Many others. I have another student in Florida who's working on a sound-based neurofeedback application to work with veterans who have both PTSD and traumatic brain injuries, And she's working on evidence to show there. But we have students all over the nation working on things that are, you know, specific to their localities, and we really encourage students to get embedded in their communities to really work on making a difference and changing that or improving that system of health within their area. That's what we're all about.
Thanks for sharing that. You mentioned that that Dr. Cummings, mm-hmm. either male or female, and the foundation are providing $241,000
mm-hmm. quarterly,
quarter, so mm-hmm. almost $1 million a year. So I guess the question is that a contribution, mm-hmm. or? But then I also see on the balance sheet that there's a note payable for a little over $1 million. Are those two different?
It's two different. We applied for a 501c3 status, and we obtained that in March of last year. And that $1 million that we have on the balance sheet as liability is a note still to the Cummings family that is just a call. So at some point they will call that note. But moving forward, we are now in a contribution situation as a nonprofit entity, and the foundation funds us at $241 quarterly.
Okay. But the note will remain.
It will remain
as a liability.
Correct.
And we'll get paid.
And we'll get paid as soon as we are profitable. Okay. That's the agreement with the family.
And then. Just out of curiosity, because I'm not an accountant.
You're fine.
Do you have to change some of your accounting, not GAAP or not accrual, but like for retained earnings or things like that, switching from a for-profit
yes,
to a not-for-profit?
Yeah,
so
we did.
Is that reflected in this current set of statements, or will it be forthcoming in the
It'll be forthcoming also in the audit for year end. We did have a primary principal, which was Janet Cummings, Dr. Janet Cummings. She was the original principal of the institute. And when we converted over, the stock went to the company, and essentially the retained earnings stayed with the company. And she's no longer a principal holder of the company. So we have taken her off. We've actually financially, she's no longer responsible for the company. We're standalone at this point in time.
Right. And so are either of the Cummings involved, either as
they are
trustees or
board members?
Board members of the institute.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. I just have a couple of questions for you.
Yeah.
Could you help us understand where you are in the process of becoming accredited?
Absolutely. So we, in the past year, what we did was we hired a full-time policy and compliance officer to help us just, you know, learn the process of accreditation. And so in the past year, we attended the DEAC annual conference in April in D.C., and then we also sent our policy and compliance officer to the most recent training in Seattle. And then we've been networking here within the state as much as we possibly can, but as well as with DEAC is really nice to provide mentors when you attend their conferences. And so through those connections, we've been gaining information, you know, each and every day as we move in the process towards our writing our SER. So we've been in almost constant contact with representatives or other DEAC accredited schools to help us learn the process of what the SER needs to be and just institutional effectiveness and, you know, learning how to report and do what they want us to do.
Okay. And when are you eligible to actually submit your application?
June 2017. So our goal is to submit an application in June.
Okay. Did the switch from a for-profit institution to a not-for-profit change that?
Not a whole lot, because, you know, we really had not been writing our SER, you know, in the financial sense, but prior to the switch. So it's been almost a year since we transitioned from for-profit to not-for-profit.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And after you make that submission, mm-hmm. Assuming things go well, when do you expect that you would be accredited?
18 to 24 months is what we've been told is the soonest that any school has we've been told that some schools get through faster, and we don't want to anticipate, you know, we don't want to think too unrealistically, so we're planning on 18 to 24 months out.
Okay. And one of the reasons I'm asking, mm-hmm. obviously, you want to be accredited, but this is a milestone for the school mm-hmm. and for your students. Mm-hmm. When I take a look at your student break even mm-hmm. Calculations and projections, you're a little over 100 students, and
yep.
You're about 100 students
yep.
away from
right.
from meeting that.
Yep.
I would imagine it's difficult to attract doctoral candidates to a school that's not accredited.
It's actually very, very difficult. The first question out of the mouths of those who call us, very eager to enroll as soon as possible because, again, their organization needs them and they want to go into this career is, are you accredited? You know, not even nationally, but internationally, we have a lot of interest, and unfortunately, the word accreditation is often synonymous with legal, and in other countries who really need us. And so we are desperately pushing towards accreditation. On the other hand, we stand to really gain from, and what you heard from Brighton is definitely an opportunity for Cummings to be able to partner with Workforce to send us students, because we have such a targeted focus on helping organizations meet their goals and helping them improve healthcare in their local community. So we definitely stand a lot to gain by diversifying, but again, are kind of hand-tied because we need to get that accreditation before we add programs so that we don't reset our timeline. So yes, we're in a pickle now with enrollment, but we've already picked up some enrollment just due to that organic traffic and, you know, switching to a new marketing company, which we're excited about. But in terms of diversifying and really attracting a larger student base, that's really going to come after accreditation.
Okay. So when Dr. Cummings first appeared before us, there was an awful lot of questions about the ability to continue to fund mm-hmm. This endeavor mm-hmm. until such a point in time that it's become self-sustaining. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we are looking at $241,000 a quarter.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Let's call it just over $1 million. Let's call it $1 million a year. Mm-hmm. Just okay.
Yep.
And probably 3 years, mm-hmm. The family is able to. And committed to being able to sustain
yes.
that?
The family in the last board meeting, we did speak on that point, and the family committed to the accreditation and through that long term.
Okay. What if it's 5 years?
I think we'll be, from a financial standpoint, it won't be an issue. Commitment-wise, they have committed long term. Like I said in the board meeting, they mentioned that they're willing to commit all the way through. So I don't see that being an issue.
Okay. All right. You have any more questions?
What's the tuition?
The tuition is low. We're at $21,000 all in right now. We once we converted to nonprofit, we're able to balance our budget and not be in the red so much financially speaking. We were able to look at how can we attract students until we're accredited, and reducing tuition was one of the ways that we did that. It has gotten us some additional students. It didn't get us quite as many as we had hoped, but it is definitely something where students are calling us and saying, look, we compared you to the other program, and the other program is 230% more, and we don't see what more we would get. I can pay for this tuition if I take, you know, 1 to 2 courses per semester. I don't care about the accreditation. I want the degree. So
the program at ASU? Or?
Correct. That's mm-hmm. There's
is that
one
the
other,
only
program.
Other program.
Nope, there's one more. And again, we expect to see many more starting to sprout up because of the need. But one more started in the past 6 months at Freed Hardeman University in Tennessee. It's a very small campus-based Christian university, very different way of delivering the program.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Wish you tremendous success.
Appreciate it.
And appreciate you for being here today.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Next. We're going to skip right over to Fortis College and go to Galvanize. And thank you for closing the door.
Absolutely.
Would you like to introduce yourself for the record?
Sure. Good morning. My name is Joanna Shea. I manage regulatory affairs for Galvanize, and we're joined today on the phone by Mr. Mike Isham, who is our VP of Finance.
Okay.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, welcome. And where are you today, Mike?
I'm in Denver.
Oh, I think you should have paid for the plane ticket. This is not
coming to Phoenix.
This is not showing an awful lot of intelligence on your part. Okay.
Warmer there.
Yes, it is. Although the skiing is better in your neck of the woods. So, is there any statement that you'd like to make before I continue to embarrass myself?
Absolutely. As a quick refresher on the Galvanize business model, we build urban co-working spaces and classrooms, which together form a Galvanize campus. This campus houses both student and community members, bringing industry and education under one roof. Our community members range from entrepreneurial teams of 1 to 2 people all the way up to satellite teams of big name companies like IBM or Pandora. Our student members are enrolled in our immersive programs as full-time students and have full access to campus amenities, including what we call open seating. We've currently got campuses in Denver and Boulder, Colorado, Seattle, San Francisco, Austin, soon to be New York City, and also soon to be Phoenix. We'll open our campus on 515 East Grant Street, late January 2017. As such, you probably noticed our financial report reflects zero revenue. I'd also like to highlight an exciting development reflected on our balance sheet that occurred just prior to the August board meeting, where we were granted conditional approval. Galvanize received investment from ABS Capital Partners, which is reflected and accounts for the significant change in our assets. So thank you so much for having us. We're excited to bring the Galvanize community to Phoenix and excited to answer your questions.
Okay.
Can I have the phone number for ABS Partners? I assume that was about a $25 million investment.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to say 26 total, 25 from ABS, and then one other company came in.
Okay. You don't have to give me the other.
You can Google them.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, in your financial projections, you don't have any revenue for the whole year. So, in this document that I have here. So are you not projecting any revenue, even though you're going to open in January, or are you just waiting?
Sure, Mike, I'll let you answer Mr. Bornberg's question.
Yes, that's correct. For fiscal year 16, we're not projecting any revenue. For 17, we are.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I was looking at 16 and thinking that it was 17.
So what are your projections for
17?
For the Arizona campus.
Are you interested in the total campus or just the education business? I thought it's been a little bit of a disconnect for me on what you guys would like to see.
Well, we're obviously more interested in the education piece, but to the extent that the rest of it, which I understand your model correctly, the answer to this question is that it does, to the extent the rest of it is required to fund the education piece. So that, you know, there's a symbiotic relationship between, we'd like to see the entire picture.
Absolutely.
Did I answer your question?
Consolidated for the, yep, that's perfect. We are projecting the Phoenix campus to approximately $3.6 million in revenue total. Of that, about $2 million is related to the education versus.
Okay. And that's revenue What about expenses?
So our projected EBITDA for the consolidated year is positive $267,000. Our projected education only is about $500,000 of that. Oh, excuse me.
So the education is subsidizing?
So I'm on the wrong line. Education business, EBITDA, positive $500,000. The total for the campus. Now that's actually correct, is $267,000, which means our other lines of businesses, i.e. our membership, which burdens the majority of the rent. It's actually at a negative margin, but collectively we are going to show a profit for the year.
Okay. Okay. And that's wonderful for a startup school. Go ahead.
Can I finish the sentence, which is that given the fact that, you know, your other campuses, and we appreciate being included in such a hip roster of galvanized communities, Austin, Boulder, New York City, my hometown. However, I guess the question is, what's different about this compared to the others? Because so far, you know, each of the last 2 years have been losses, first around $5 million, and around $11 million. And so what are you going to be doing differently across the enterprise now, or what have you learned from those other ones that you have such good that you're so optimistic about Phoenix, which we hope for, and I hope to stop in, assuming
absolutely
that you still have the your work out the 3 year thing.
We're finishing our liquor license, hopefully in the next couple of months. We do have a community space, and we really anticipate serving as a hub for the whole Phoenix community, not just for a student member or not just for a community member. We also see a lot of large companies in Phoenix like Allstate and U-Haul that aren't traditionally tech companies, but who have teams of thousands of developers, and that relationship is really strong in the community. So we think that the presence will be really successful. We've also been able to establish ourselves elsewhere. We certainly don't haphazardly choose our new markets. We've built something that we call the Galvanize Index to assess really any town or city in the United States. And the index in Phoenix was very attractive. So that's looking at number of tech jobs available, number of young people, number of people with college degrees, really a range of factors. And we've been able to base that off of our current campuses. So we're confident and excited to come into Phoenix, and we also like to build the community because we're not just an educational program prior to entering the space.
Okay. So will all of the sites be profitable, similar to the Phoenix one, or will Phoenix somehow be different?
No, actually, most of our sites are profitable. The separate campuses are. A big component of the consolidated loss that you're seeing in our audited financials, about $14.5 million of that is all non-cash items. So the biggest one being non-cash rent expense. When we go into a new market, and this is the same for Phoenix, we get free rent periods. So by GAAP standards, you do have to take your total rent payment, total future rent payments over the next 10 years or whatever, and divide that by how many periods you are there and take the straight line rent expense. So additionally,
about $4 million is depreciation and amortization expense, non-cash, and then some interest charges related to equity financing that we've done. So, it cuts that loss down by about half when you remove that stuff. But you are correct. At the consolidated level, we do continue to show a net income gap loss.
Okay. And you get free rent, too?
As a member?
Always negotiate free rent.
No, like Galvanize gets free rent.
There was an incentive for them to build where they did.
Right. We're in the warehouse district. The campus is pretty spectacular, so you'll have to come by once we open in January.
Okay.
We'll be hosting Phoenix Startup Week, actually, so our doors are wide open.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some incentive to come where we did.
Nothing's free, right? It's baked into our rent somewhere along the line. Nothing's free.
Okay.
The availability or the closeness of the liquor for our students caused me serious concern, obviously. I believe you're going to be very careful.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was a very lively conversation the initial board meeting. But I don't think we need to revisit that today.
I'm watching.
Unless there were samples.
unless
they were offering samples at the meeting. Anything else for them? Well, thank you. Really appreciate your being here today. And,
it's my pleasure.
Thank you for participating on the phone, Mike. And we look forward to your opening in January.
Mike, I'm sorry. What was your last name?
Isham, I-S-H-A-M.
And your title?
VP of Finance.
Okay, thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next on our list is, Hahn University. And I'm not sure.
Alex, are you there?
I am here.
Okay.
Great.
There.
Glad to have you by phone. Would have been
good.
Wonderful to have you here in person. Is there anybody else representing Hahn today?
No one else.
Okay. Would you like to give us an update?
Sure. Let's see. Currently, we have not yet heard from the Department of Education regarding our federal financial aid application, and we are waiting with bated breath on their decision for that one. And for our 2017 budget, we added $13,000 for advertising. And this is a first, and generally the owners have relied on some word of mouth and connections with the Chinese community and their connections with universities in China to increase our enrollment. And I think they finally realized that advertising locally is also something that would be a boon to increase the enrollment here at the school. So that's very good. We are also going to be increasing our public education classes in Tuina, Qigong, and Asian nutrition. And in that regard, we're partnering with the Confucius Institute at the University of Arizona to offer some of those classes as sort of a joint presentation. And this actually is good because this will be advertised to the entire UA student body. So we're pretty optimistic about how things are going to be looking in 2017 in terms of our student enrollment.
Well, that's good news. Where are you placing this advertising?
We would probably be doing things like, and we're still looking at how we're going to do the advertising. The Tucson Weekly, and probably Natural Awakenings, and possibly the Arizona Republic. We've also thought of doing the Wildcat, the University of Arizona Wildcat, and also Pima Community College.
Okay. Doctor, do you have any questions for?
Sure. Hi, Alex.
Good morning.
A couple of questions. So what's current enrollment right now?
We currently have 9 students.
So, I'm assuming, yeah, go ahead.
The break even, I believe, is 14.
Okay. It says 15 to 18 here. And so, it looks like that you'll finish the year at an operating loss. Let me just see. When does your fiscal year end?
December.
December 31st.
Right. So I'm sorry, let me just... So you have a loss going into the fourth quarter at $55,000, right? And then I noticed on the balance sheet that in the current liabilities, there's $126,500 due to related party. And I was wondering how, you know, what's the wherewithal given the, you know, the overall balance sheet to be able to address that, given that the current assets are pretty small, and then when you add, I don't know if this was the first time that we've seen that liability due to related party, but it makes your current liabilities jump up, you know, to $237,000. So I guess that's the first thing. And then just since I'm looking at the balance sheet, is that a typo on the Wells Fargo checking account 6632 that it's a minus $21,000?
It could very well be a typo.
Well, isn't that the overdraft?
Maybe.
Okay, so you have a negative checking account.
Yeah, no, we don't have a negative checking account.
You don't?
Nope.
That's good. Okay.
It shows on there. The September 30th balance sheet?
Yeah. It's in the report, Asian Institute of Medical Studies balance sheet as of September 30th, and it would be page 1 of 5.
Oh, I see Wells Fargo, 6632, 21,000. I'm not sure. That doesn't make sense to me.
Are you getting like a lot of mail from Spargo?
No.
So, all right. Well, let's just if we were just to assume that that's not a typo, right? Or it is a typo.
No, I don't think it's a typo.
I don't think it's a typo because historically
the balance sheet wouldn't foot if it were a typo.
Okay. Okay. So then I guess back to my original question, what is the $126,500 liability? It's on page 2, Alex.
Right.
And given that it's a current liability, you know, the likelihood of, you know, how are you going to cover that?
Well, I believe that liability is money that is owed to shareholders. That's one of the things that I'm thinking.
It sends us to
Huijong. Huijong. And that's John's wife. John, who is the owner of the school, and that is his wife. She's also
Is that Stephanie also?
School.
So that could be something that she has put in as far as her investment in school.
If that's the case, does that $126,500 show up either as an asset, or did it show on the income statement somewhere as a as an investment?
I'm not sure how they're handling that particular line item in terms of assets, liabilities. One of the things that I could request from John and Stephanie is to write a report to ASBPSC explaining that particular line item.
I guess it shows up in the previous audit.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Okay.
Do you have any more questions?
No.
I want to draw your attention to your the profit and loss statement, which begins on page 4 of your financial statements dated September 2016.
Yeah.
Did you guys take the month of September off?
No. Well, actually, nearly all the month. We start school about the fourth week, usually. Third or fourth week.
Okay, so that's why I'm saying only $150 roughly of patient treatments and no other income.
Yeah, exactly.
But close to $10,000 of payroll expenses.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
The clinic, it looks like that means the clinic was closed. Was the clinic closed?
Yes, the clinic closed for 2 weeks.
Oh.
And I'm assuming I'm assuming that most of the patients who are seen at the clinic are there being served by the students.
Yes.
So if the students aren't on campus, then the clinic can't provide services.
Correct.
How is the merger going?
The merger is going slow. We can't really do a merger until Han receives federal financial aid. We can sort of like merge faculty in terms of one school pays for one faculty to teach one class and the other school teaches or, you know, pays that faculty to do another class. And we can share faculty, we can share administration, but we can't share any classroom students mingling together or in the clinic. So that's basically due to federal financial aid because the Arizona school has federal financial aid and doesn't. So as soon as we can get federal financial aid, then we can really start on a merger. Right now we're just in holding position.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time today. I don't have any more questions. Every time. Go ahead.
Oh, Alex, this is Terry, and I know I keep asking this.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you haven't heard yet from financial aid, and the longer, I guess I don't, the longer it takes, the less positive I see it. So, not to be negative in any here, but anyway. What happens if that is the actual case, that you get denied, Han's denied? What happens?
Well, one of the things that we would do is that's the reason we're increasing the marketing budget, because we will then start seriously marketing Han University in the Tucson area. Excuse me. And when we've done this before, like, you know, 3-4 years ago, we always had up to 5 or 6 students at the cohort come in every fall. And so if we don't get the federal financial aid, excuse me, valley fever again, that means that we would really start needing to increase our enrollment.
And they really would try to maintain two schools in the Tucson.
Yes, they will try to maintain those two schools. Yes. That is the current strategy. That could shift, but that is the current strategy.
Can I ask Alex, because you and I talked about a few years ago, is there a reason that one school just doesn't purchase the other school? Then you have one school.
It has to do with what's called the EB-5 visa, which is what John and Stephanie came to this country on. And that EB-5 visa basically states that if they purchase a company that's in need of help, which they did, they purchased the Asian Institute of Medical Studies, and if within 2 years after their application or approving that school was approved, and it was approved probably about, I think about 10 months ago, that once they're approved, they have 2 years to bring in 10 full-time people and increase the revenue. And that is the reason that they can't just merge the two schools, that they can't blend them at this point, because even though Han University is, in a sense, not financially stable at this point, that is the foundation of their investment in this country.
Okay. Thanks. I get it.
It's a very complex situation. It's a high learning curve for me, let me tell you this.
What happens? Now I'm just curious. Who reviews them in 2 years, and what determines if from 2 years of the approved app, Han isn't financially stable? What happens?
I don't know if Han needs to be financially stable,
but
it needs to show that its stability has improved financially from where it was, and it has to document that it has hired 10 American workers for full-time salaries within that 2 year period. And I think those are the main criteria. And, you know, increasing employment of U.S. citizens.
How many workers have they hired?
They basically hired about 4 or 5 at this point.
So you got more to go. Right.
And they're all part-time. So one of the strategies is, and we'll see how they're going to work this one, is that and this is, again, it's an assumption. Assuming that HUD receives federal financial aid, they will merge the Arizona school into HUD University, which means that all the employees that are currently employed by the Arizona school will then become HUD employees, which would easily take care of that particular criteria. And that is, it's not the DOE, it's like ICE or some of those national organizations that oversees
visas
and documentation. Yeah.
Okay.
Best wishes, Alex.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time today.
All right.
And we wish you success going forward.
Well, thank you. I appreciate those wishes.
All right.
Thanks, Alex.
You guys take care.
Bye-bye. Hey, next on the agenda is UEI. I was going to try to pronounce that, but I wasn't sure.
Exactly the way you did it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Would you please introduce yourselves for the board?
Sure. My name is Sanjay Sardana. I'm the CFO for IEC and UEI College.
And I'm Ravina Miller, the campus president for the Phoenix campus.
Okay, and do you have anybody with you on the phone?
Nope, I flew in this morning.
Okay. Well, congratulations on being where you are today.
I'm sure
no matter where you were leaving from, although it's home.
Actually, it's just Irvine. Nice. Phoenix is actually my home.
Oh, that's it.
But I'm living in Irvine right now for IEC. But I have my house here right now.
Okay. Phoenix, well, that's a double bonus for you.
I call Phoenix my home. I love the weather here. I love everything about Phoenix.
Okay. Would you like to give us an opening statement?
Sure. You know, you had mentioned at the beginning of the meeting today that the Finance Committee has met after a while. So I kind of wanted to just maybe talk a little bit about our story. So it kind of adds a little context to where we are financially and why we are there financially. Back in 2014, if you recall, Anthem went bankrupt. And we had purchased Anthem not only in Phoenix, but also in Houston, as well as in Florida as well, a bunch of campuses there as well. And we had three campuses, or Anthem had three campuses here with about 250 students. So we taught out all of those students on our expense. And after that was done, then we got approval for UEI College to be approved. And so UEI College is a brand new brand in the Phoenix market. And since 2015, 2016 as well, we've made significant investments in Phoenix because we want to grow our campus here in this market. We believe in the Phoenix market, so we're definitely committed, and we've definitely got IEC behind us and supporting us financially and getting us through this tough time where we're not making any money, but we do see a return on investment here. Marketing-wise as well, we've made some significant investments because it's a brand new brand name. So this year we'll probably be spending about $800,000 on just marketing in the Phoenix market to get our brand name out there and get our good recognition. So that's kind of just a little story on where we are and why our financials look the way they look. And we're hopeful and we're committed to getting this campus to profitability. And we've made a lot of changes within the campus with the arena being new. We have a new director of student finance, a new director of admissions, hopefully grow the campus to where it needs to be.
Okay, great. And how are things going with your plans?
They're actually going well. You know, last year we had about 60 students. We're now at about 200 students, so definitely making significant improvements. We've tripled our population. You know, to break even, we need to be between 225 to 300. So we're moving in that direction, definitely, but we're not there yet.
Okay. Any questions?
Yeah, well, the question that I had was, I think that you had projected you're looking at about a $1 million loss.
Yes,
for this
fiscal year, yeah.
For this fiscal year.
Yeah. And we've actually done better than what we projected in Q3.
Yeah, I think
we said we would lose $528,000 just in Q3. We've lost about $400,000. So still losing money, but doing much better than what we projected.
Okay, so what's the point moving forward where you expect to be in the black?
So I don't know if we'll be in the black until probably Q4 of 2017. You know, we still need to get to that population of about 300 to become profitable. So we won't be probably cumulative for the whole year. We won't be profitable in 17, but on a quarterly basis, my hope is by Q4 we'll be profitable.
Okay. You gave us parent company.
Yes. IEC financials. Yeah.
Right. And also the Phoenix campus.
Mm-hmm.
There are not dates in these things. These quarters. So
we'll make sure to do that, but they're March 31st, June 30th, and September
30th. Okay, so we're almost through with the fourth quarter.
Yes.
Okay, and your projection for the parent company, IEC, was to have $1.3 million in profit.
Yeah, we should be there.
So you're on track
for
that.
We're on track for that, yeah.
And for the Phoenix campus, you were projecting $3 million,
yeah. We'll probably be right around that, maybe a little slightly higher, but right around there.
Okay. I'm assuming some portion of that is the reinvestment in the practice you were discussing.
Yeah, reinvestment in the marketing. We've also got some depreciation because we picked up all the assets, so that's part of it as well. And just, you know, the infrastructure, I think the campus itself costs us a lot. So if you see our occupancy costs, it's we're going to probably do about 900,000. So we have a 40,000 square foot facility right on I-17, which is half vacant, which is not a good thing for us, but we're hoping to fill it.
How much of that $800,000 you said you were going to be spending, was that this
fiscal year?
This
fiscal year, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. We spent something close to that last year as well, but definitely we're committed in our investment here.
Okay. Well, I would think that obviously the marketing added significantly to your $1.3 million loss, although I suppose you could say without the marketing you would have
the revenue. Right. Yes. Yeah, revenue will close around $3 million this year. We've done about $1.5 million last year, so we're definitely moving in the right direction. Things are moving in the right direction.
Okay. And how long have you been on the job?
I started August 22nd.
Okay. I hope that ends up being a good move for you.
Yes. I love it here.
Good. Where are you from?
California. Originally moved to Texas about 3 years ago, and so now here.
Okay. What part of Texas?
Dallas, Fort Worth, Mansfield area.
Okay. Know it well. Yeah. All right. Any more questions? And we thank you for your time today and appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Karen.
Last but certainly not least, we have the University of Medical Sciences, Arizona.
Janice, you want to change your name? Start with Arizona.
So we can be first.
You're going to end.
Yeah, see, if it would be Arizona University. Of course, I don't know how ASU would.
I don't know.
How about Arizona Medical Sciences University?
Yeah, that's worth the thought. Get pushed up on the list.
Get pushed up on the list.
Would have missed out on all of the educational and entertainment.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay. Would you like to introduce yourself formally?
Sure. My name is Dr. Janice Smith, and I'm the president of the University of Medical Sciences, Arizona. And good morning. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being with us. Do you have anything that you would like to share with us before we begin our friendly question?
Sure. I don't have as much information from the meeting that we had for the provisional license renewal, but since then, we, as of actually yesterday, graduated 6 students, so that was very exciting for them and us. Also, we are still projected to begin our cohort class for one of our programs that we had placed on hold until we had more individuals sign up for it. So over the past 6 months, there has been a lot of traction for the program, and so the board and everybody voted to go forward, release the program off a hold, and begin the first cohort for fall of 2017.
That's great. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Would you have some questions?
Well, which program?
It's the Doctor of Science in Movement Sciences.
So what is that?
That is basically a degree for post-professionals who are either physical therapists or occupational therapists or in kinesiology. And it's a degree that analyzes the movement of human beings that have either disabilities or sports injuries or other injuries that occurred along the way, and then specifically designing programs to help increase their movement, their functional ability, basically.
And would the graduates graduate?
There was a group that graduated for the Doctor of Physical Therapy and Doctor of Occupational Therapy.
And how's your HLC application process?
It's going pretty well. Earlier in the year, we did meet with them, and they looked over that initial application, and gave us a couple things, well, I think about three or four different things that they would like for us to kind of beef up before submitting the or going to the next step. So we're just basically working on that portion so that we can quickly move through. That accreditation is at the top part of our list, so trying not to miss any steps.
And to what degree is your business plan predicated on getting accreditation, and what's the time frame that you're anticipating?
Because HLC, it's quite a lengthy process. Right now, we really want to get to that portion where we reach candidacy, and we would like to do that within the next time frame. They told us our time frame was too aggressive, so we had to dress it back. So I believe we said hopefully between 3 to 5 years.
But of course, candidacy?
For candidacy, we really would like to go a lot sooner than that, but they told us dress it back because they just can't simply, they only meet twice a year, which you probably already know this. Because of their time frame, they just simply couldn't meet what we were trying to push through.
And one of the points that they brought up, that you brought up in the October meeting, was some of the governance recommendations that there was, that there was either a married couple serving an executive and also on the board, one is reporting to the other.
Right.
So I think that was something that they asked you to address. And I think from sort of like a financial control standpoint, mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Right, that's correct. And that is definitely because they're suggesting that we should do that. We are actually working on that portion to change that. So once it comes to the part where they are now reviewing the documents, we just don't want anything on the list that's going to deter or take a longer time for us to achieve the candidacy portion. Of course, we want accreditation, but candidacy will allow us to get to the programs that we're trying to, that right. we have on our target list.
Okay. Does that have to be addressed before you submit? What's the next thing you submit to them? Or
it is the next thing. Oh, gosh, I'm trying to remember. Is the letter stating that you will move forward to the application phase.
From you?
Right. But she told us specifically, do not send that in until you have those things
okay,
together.
Okay, so until you get that taken care of.
Right, which should be at the top of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because she was saying that if we submit it, chances are they're going to come back and say, you know what?
Something else.
Right.
That's our job.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, thank you for providing us with this additional information. I have a couple of questions about your projections.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. If I'm reading things correctly, you were profitable for the entire year.
Yes.
Which is great. It looks like you are managing your resources very conservatively, and that's a good thing. In September, the quarter ended September, you had a slight profit. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. We're almost through with the quarter ending in December, and you were projecting a fairly substantial loss. Where are we?
That loss is only because our semester starts in August, and so there isn't much of a change that's occurring for that particular quarter. It's probably not going to be as substantial as you're seeing here, just simply because there were some donations as well that came in for this particular quarter. But there's always, because of the way how the semester is, one of these quarters is always going to show a loss, but then it catches up the next quarter.
Okay. What is your total enrollment now?
It's at the 29. Yes. So come in January, though, it's more than likely going to increase because of the application process is going on now. Deadline ends December 23rd. So I'll have a new number then.
Okay. That's all my questions. It looks like you guys are making great progress.
Yes, thank you.
Where are most of your students from? Or are they local students, or is it
across the nation.
So is it blended, or is it all online?
It's all online. There is one program that does allow for them to come to campus to do lab, which would be this one starting up in for fall 2017 at Doctor of Science and Movement Sciences.
That would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, so part of it will be hybrid, part of it online, and then you have to come to the campus.
How many doctor, let's say, PT programs are 100% online? Is that pretty common?
Yes, the one that we're doing, because it's a post-professional program, so they are already PTs, but they have a bachelor's or master's.
Right.
So, yes, it's very common for the post-professionals to be online. Same thing for the post-professional occupational doctor.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you being here today.
Can I ask a question off the record?
Yes, you may. Well,
it's possible.
You're now adjourned.
Thank you.
I feel sorry for you.